Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 319. We've been doing it all wrong. Sunday, October 29th, 2023. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, Ever Expanding Skill Set, The Back Porch, The Front Porch, and Off the Shelf. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me today. It is a dreary, drizzly day near Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania, but the trees still have a lot of color and it's kind of a cozy day. So after a busy week and a very busy day working yesterday, I'm happy to be just sipping tea, sitting around home, starting a new knitting project, and recording this episode for you. A week ago, I was meeting up with friends and knitting family from past retreats at Carol Foster's booth, Foster Sheep Farm at Rhinebeck. It's hard to believe a whole week has gone by, flown by since then. I traveled up to Rhinebeck on Friday and enjoyed a weekend of fibery goodness. We had tickets for Wool and Folk on Friday in Catskill, New York. I'm sure you've already heard from other podcasters and from having your eye on social media that the event was not as promised. And I've been reflecting on what to say about Wool and Folk because there were really some egregious wrongdoings. I think it boils down to being a case of the organizer having a lack of respect for the awesome responsibility it is to organize a yarn event for nearly 3,000 people. It's not something to be taken lightly. There are many, many steps and important things to consider that really go way beyond, you know, the yarn and the excitement and the things that are offered. Things like basic safety, infrastructure, and organization. And really, you only have a good festival of any kind once you take those things seriously and follow all the needed steps. And it was clear that this organizer, Felicia, did not do that. And in retrospect, there were many warning signs leading up to the event that she did not have respect for the size and extent of the event that was planned. For my own part, it was frustrating, disappointing, and a little bit maddening. But really, my anxiety is mostly for folks who were much more wronged and disenfranchised than I was, namely anyone with any sort of mobility issue, and secondly, the vendors of the event. So it seems that people are taking some steps to right those wrongs. I'm certainly willing to do anything within my power to assist that process. One undertaking that's already quite successful is a comprehensive list of all of the vendors who were present at Wool and Folk with workable links to their websites and Etsy shops and so on. So that if you are someone who is interested in doing some online shopping for yarn and other products, you might consult this list when you are thinking about making those purchases. I will link that to my show notes, and there are lots of other places where you can find that. I was very fortunate to be able to locate and shop at two booths that I really had on my list to visit. One is Megan at Distal Fink Fibers, and I was able to shop in her booth with Mary Beth and have a nice conversation with Megan and her husband and another friend who was helping work the booth, and purchased some yarn there that will be coming socks for my sister in the near future. Another booth I visited was the booth of Jewel, who makes fasteners for knitwear. And I had heard an extensive interview on the Cast On podcast regarding the process that is used to create these fasteners. I have some of the screw-on fasteners and I use them quite a bit for my knitwear. I think they make, it's sort of like knitwear jewelry, and it's also very practical for fastening and closing up different pieces of knitwear that you have, maybe even without sewing on buttons or a shawl that always threatens to slide off your shoulders. And I made a beautiful purchase of three of her newly fashioned knitwear fasteners. They're in sort of a weathered bronze, and these are quite a bit easier to fasten with post backs as opposed to screw-on backs. And we had a lovely conversation as well. It seemed to be a great spot to meet up with other knitters and podcasters, and I actually saw quite a few people that I was hoping to see at Rhinebeck, like Corinne of the Woolly Thistle, and was able to get some great photos and have some nice conversations in between the raindrops. Saturday at Rhinebeck was a little bit drizzly and damp, but because of the awesome infrastructure and the way that the organizers are very seasoned at running this event, we had a great time despite the weather. And one of the things Mary Beth and I were eager to do was to volunteer at the Hudson Valley Textile Project tent. They had their own separate tent this year, right in the walkway where you can go into all of the barns from the right and the left. And we were able to spend some time talking with prospective members and people who were interested in the work of the Hudson Valley Textile Project, including Clean Fleece, the new scouring facility that is open in the Hudson Valley. I'm looking forward to making a visit in the spring, maybe in conjunction with the Washington County Farm and Fiber Tour that happens at the end of April. Most of the shopping I do at Rhinebeck is for gifts, so I don't share a lot about it on the podcast. It just so happens that I have friends and family who are the happy recipients of the kinds of crafts and products that you can buy at the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. And I would rather spend my money there on the vendors there than I would shopping at the mall or ordering something on Amazon. So what happens is I'm happy shopping all day long, and I'm spending money that I would ordinarily spend on gift giving anyway. And then I make a few special purchases for myself. This year, those things were the jewel fasteners that I already mentioned, a small needle and scissors case from Thread and Maple, made in beautiful leather, handcrafted in leather, and a yarn purchase from Patricia of Tidal Yarns. So I'll insert a photograph in this episode of those items as my haul, and then I'll have a separate photograph of some things that I purchased and collected together for a lucky recipient of a Ko-fi drawing. I'm very grateful to the monthly member contributors and the one-time contributors who make financial contributions via Ko-fi to the Yarns at Yanhu podcast. And each quarter, I draw one of the names, anyone who has contributed any dollar amount in the past quarter is entered into the drawing. And each quarter, I have a little something special for that recipient. I'll be pulling the next name on December 21st, our winter solstice. And that prize will include a number of things that I selected at the New York Sheep and Wool Festival, including a beautiful skein of Foster Sheep Farm Claire's Corey, which is a Corriedale-Wensleydale blend made by Carol in natural, beautiful gray, and some soap from Mary Jane, who also vends in her booth. Some little goodies made up from members of the Hudson Valley Textile Project, an issue of the first Common Threads publication, and a container of wool pellets, which are little fertilizing wool pellets that are made from cleaning up the skirted bits that fall on the floor at the scouring facility. So all that and a few more things that I didn't even mention will be included in the quarterly prize. Once again, the drawing is December 21st. If you didn't get a chance to attend the Sheep and Wool Festival in Rhinebeck, or even if you did, this is your way to get your hands on some carefully selected goodies chosen by me. Just a few days before departing for the New York Sheep and Wool Festival, Mary Beth and I collaborated to create pairings for our Advent puzzle exchange and then notify each participant via email with the name and the address and the email of their exchange partner. So if you have completed the form, but you haven't received an email, please contact me right away. It could be that your email went to a junk folder or something like that, and we need to get you with the information regarding your partner. I did some shopping for my puzzle exchange partner while I was at Rhinebeck. I'm so excited. And I will be sending out my package by November 15th. I think we're all U.S. recipients. We don't have any overseas recipients in this exchange. So you may be able to bend that by just a few days, but please not much, because I think everyone is looking forward to their package. And I'd like everyone to receive something certainly in advance of December 1st, so that they can start opening and putting together their puzzle during the Advent season. I wanted to talk a little bit about what I was wearing at the festival. I was so pleased to be wearing my Darta sweater designed by Inez Song and featured in the Neons and Neutrals book that was edited and published by Amy Giel. I was hoping to see someone else wearing a Darta sweater. And though I saw many, many sweaters and accessories that were also featured in the Neons and Neutrals book, I did not see a single other person wearing the Darta sweater, which I found surprising. And I wore it 2 days. I wore it to Wool and Folk, and I wore it on Saturday at Rhinebeck. I was very, very pleased with how well this sweater wore, how comfortable it was, and it got a lot of attention with the neon pink ruffles. Many people recognized the sweater and knew what it was. And I got also a lot of questions about, was it difficult to add the ruffles? The short answer is no, absolutely not. The ruffles are one of the easiest aspects of the sweater because at the very beginning, you install these twisted knit stitch columns that go up the entire front of the sweater. And that gives you your guide for where to attach the ruffles. I used a smaller needle than called for to attach the ruffles. And I did not increase at quite the extent that was suggested in the pattern. I wanted to kind of keep them calm, the ruffles, because they were such a bright color. So I was sort of working on cutting down on the amount of fabric in the ruffle. So I increased at about half the rate that was suggested and with a much smaller needle, so they were a little bit tighter in form. I think that even though this sweater is kind of a special piece, I will get quite a bit of wear out of it because I really like the shape and the fit and the way I did the sleeves. It's all very comfortable. I wore this sweater over an Amy jumpsuit that I sewed from a linen. I don't know if it's like a linen rayon blend or maybe even a linen poly blend. It definitely has quite a bit of linen, but it doesn't wrinkle as readily as 100% linen. It has deep pockets. As you know, I don't need to tell the listenership how much I love the Amy jumpsuit. I think this is my fourth jumpsuit with pants. And then I also have two Amy jumpsuit hacks where I made it into a dress. I wore this jumpsuit all 3 days of festival going. On Sunday, which was quite a bit cooler, I wore it with my Bressa sweater, also in a cropped length. And that has a very beautiful colorwork yoke. It's designed by Marie Wallen. And I knit that particular one in Marie Wallen's yarn as well. And I had a cowl from the book and mitts from the book. So on Sunday, I was really decked out in Marie Wallen, which was perfect for the weather. Another highlight of the New York Sheep and Wool Festival was getting to say hello to Amy Gille, who was signing books in the book stall on both Saturday and Sunday. I borrowed my copy of Neons and Neutrals from Jane, a new friend and friend of Mary Beth, and I wanted to get the book signed for her so that when I'm done borrowing it and send it back to her, she has a very nice personalized book. So it was great to meet her. On Saturday, I met her and said hello wearing my sweater. Didn't get a picture. I think she took a picture of me. I didn't manage to get a picture of the two of us. I don't know why. And then on Sunday, when I went with the book, of course, I was wearing a different sweater. But Mary Beth was wearing her Stries hat that's also included in Neons and Neutrals. I have since completed my first of what I imagine to be several Stries hats. This is a design by Marie Regnier, and it is for a ribbed hat. The ribbing is a little bit unique. It's a 5-stitch repeat of a rib, and it creates a fabric that looks a little bit different on the reverse than it does on the front. And the hat is knit very long, like over 12 inches, and meant to be folded way up with a very soft and luxurious brim. What I like about this pattern is that it invites the knitter to pull together a whole bunch of different yarns and is a great way to use up small bits of leftover yarn. I cast on using a German twisted cast on. And to cast on, I use only two of the three yarns. It made it a little bit easier because sometimes knitting with a whole bunch of strands held together, especially with a cast on, you miss some of the yarns and it can look a little bit sloppy. So I cast on with only two of them. I cast on with a US 7. And then after I joined to knit in the round, I switched to an 8. I knit the first portion of the hat with three yarns held together. One of them is a really fuzzy mohair silk blend. And then for the top of the hat, like sort of the crown and a little bit more of the hat, I use a US 7 and only two of the yarns. So I dropped the mohair silk blend for that portion. But the way the pattern is written, you can do any of a number of different things. You could even knit the whole hat in like a worsted weight yarn if you wanted to. It's kind of a unisex look. Pretty easy once you establish the stitch pattern. And because of the ribbing, it will fit quite a variety of sizes of heads. There are three sizes in the pattern. I knit the medium size, sort of the adult small. But yeah, like I said, the ribbing makes the fit really forgiving. And I think this would be a really wonderful gift knit. Once again, that's the Stries pattern. It's by Marie Regnier, and it's featured in Neons and Neutrals. I've already cast on a second version of this hat, which will also be a gift knit. And I can envision this pattern to be something like having socks that are always with you, always on the go, and just continue incorporating different colors of yarn, different weights of yarn, different fiber contents to keep coming up with some really interesting combinations. I learned more about the designer of this hat and her process in a series of YouTube videos created by Amy Giel. Featuring two at a time, she features the designers of patterns in this book. And then toward the end of each episode, she has the test knitters for those designs come on. It's really a very nice production, a great way to learn about the stories behind these designs and also meet some designers that I haven't heard of. So I've really been enjoying this series. I'm eyeing a few other patterns in this book. We'll see if they come to fruition. But one of the things that I'm doing as I think about a pattern and knitting it is to watch the YouTube videos featuring that designer. The podcast series is called Amy's Knit Lab, and I will link that in the show notes for this episode. All right, one more cast on. This afternoon, I'm going to be winding some yarn and casting on the reversible scarf designed by Nicolette Corley. I learned of this by reading the Common Thread publication that I received in the mail just a few days before heading off to the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. And one of the things that Hannah, the editor and organizer of this publication, is trying to do with the patterns that she posts is to highlight the patterns, existing patterns of designers that would work really great with some of the farm yarns produced by the Hudson Valley Textile Project. And so These patterns are great recommendations whether you're using those exact farm yarns or maybe you're using some hand spun, which is what I have. I've talked a little bit before about over dyeing some Rambouillet that was spun for me by Emily. I have nearly 700 yards of some beautiful, floofy, spongy hand spun. It varies in thickness from sort of a fingering to a worsted. And I really wanted to find just the right thing that would really highlight the qualities of a hand spun yarn. And it would also be something that I could really enjoy wearing. And so when I saw this reversible scarf pattern, I immediately thought that this would be a really good fit. And it's just what it says. It's a scarf that looks good from either side with some really fun cabling detail. It's been a while since I've done any cables, so I'm eager to get my hands on some cabling in a project. And I think it will really be a great way to showcase this beautiful handspun yarn. The Common Threads publication has QR codes where you can link immediately to a designer's pattern and make a purchase directly. And I think that is a really great way to promote existing patterns of some of these designers. And I can't wait to see how this unfolds in future publications of Common Threads and how we get to know or get to revisit some of those designs. There is also a brand new design that's featured in this publication as well. Once again, that's a reversible scarf designed by Nicolette Corley, and of course I will link it in the show notes. The title for this episode is We've Been Doing It All Wrong, and you may have spent some time listening and wondering, what? What have we been doing all wrong? Friends, I don't know about you, but I have been cooking spaghetti squash all wrong. And I suspect maybe you've been doing it too. So that's why I want to talk a little bit about spaghetti squash in this episode. When I Googled spaghetti squash recipes and I did an image search, pretty much every recipe had the same sort of image, and that is a spaghetti squash that was cut from the stem end to the base and opened like in an oblong fashion and roasted on a cookie sheet. And then, you know, you would scrape it out with a fork to make these strands that are supposed to be like spaghetti. That has not worked for me, and spaghetti squash has like a very bad reputation in our household, especially where Samuel is concerned. And when he saw that I had purchased a spaghetti squash, he kind of gave me the look. And I said, I read about a new way to cook spaghetti squash. I'm going to try it. And I promise you, if we don't like it, I will never cook spaghetti squash again. Because it's not just Samuel. I am also over runny, watery spaghetti squash that is a very poor imitation of pasta. So, enough about what doesn't work. Here's the way to do it. This comes from A Couple Cooks website. And the innovative thing is the first thing you do, which is to cut across the spaghetti squash, cut through the circumference of it at the middle of the squash. Scoop out the seeds just like you would normally, and then oil the inside of the squash and place both of those pieces, the top part and the bottom part, face down on a cookie sheet to roast in a very hot oven, 400 to 425 for about 40 to 45 minutes. When you cut the spaghetti squash across the circumference, you will see, just like I did, why this is a good decision. The fibers of the squash run circular. They run around the squash. They don't run end to end of the squash. And so when you pull it out of the oven and the squash is roasted and you use a fork to start scraping, first of all, the strands of quote unquote spaghetti are much longer than they would be cut the other way. And they seem to retain a lot more of the like starchy integrity of the squash. Then a couple cooks recommends that you put the squash into a colander to let any additional moisture sort of leach out before you add it to the dish. I did this, but I didn't even really think it was necessary, because I had really nice long strands of spaghetti squash that did not seem mushy at all. And when combined with a sauce in a dish, it was really pleasant and tasty. The first evening, I should say that prepared this way, the spaghetti squash seems to yield a lot more than the way that I had been cooking it. I think a lot of it was just too watery. So I was able to use the spaghetti squash for two dinners or four generous servings. The first night, I just put a little bit of butter on the strands of spaghetti squash and created a pile in the center of a plate. And then over that, I put a homemade tomato sauce and turkey meatballs. So it was kind of like traditional spaghetti and meatballs. I saved the remainder, and then a few days later, I diced some leftover ham from the freezer and had some frozen peas, and I heated all of that up, and then I put the spaghetti squash in the skillet. And I added some sour cream and some Parmesan cheese, salt, and pepper. And we had that, which was more of a, you know, the sauce and the toppings were incorporated more with the squash the second time we ate it. Both were delicious. The squash held its integrity. And I'm going to use this method from now to eternity. I'm sold, and I'm so glad that I found it. I think I saw it first on an Instagram video that had come by way of TikTok or something. And I don't know if A Couple Cooks was the originator of what I first saw, but when I started searching for it online, that is the recipe and the set of techniques that came up. Have you been cooking spaghetti squash all wrong? I encourage you to try this method and let me know how it works for you. Plus, what do you use to top spaghetti squash? How do you enjoy it? For Off the Shelf this week, I'm going to share a poem that I saw first on Instagram. A number of poets, Naomi Shihab Nye, Camille Dungy, quite a few of the folks I follow are posting a lot of poetry and links to poetry in response to all of the difficulty and destruction that is happening in the Middle East right now. And I thought this poem might be a way to think deeply and to make some important considerations during this difficult time. I think it's one that I'm going to keep with me, maybe even copy in my own handwriting and keep in my wallet or something like that. This poem is titled How to Listen by James Crews. And that's Crews. How to Listen. Listening is a form of worship, but you don't have to kneel on the floor with folded hands or mouth the perfect prayer. Just open the door of yourself to another. Become the space they step through to show you who they are. This is holiness. Two people seated together on the pew of a park bench, at the altar of a kitchen table. Even if no one says a word for a while, receive the silence until it's like a new language. Only the two of you can speak. How to Listen by James Crews. Listening is a form of worship, but you don't have to kneel on the floor with folded hands or mouth the perfect prayer. Just open the door of yourself to another. Become the space they step through to show you who they are. This is holiness. Two people seated together on the pew of a park bench, at the altar of a kitchen table. Even if no one says a word for a while, receive the silence until it's like a new language. Only the two of you can speak. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a peaceful week with time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.